Our second case this morning is United States against Marshall. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Captain Jeremy Stevens, along with Lieutenant Colonel Mark Talatochi, for the appellant. In this case, the military judge created a material fatal variance when he substantially changed the nature of the offense in charge 3 and convicted the appellant of a charge he was unable to defend against. As referred to trial and as presented at arraignment, charge 3's sole specification alleged appellant escaped the custody of Captain Kelvin Kreitman on or about December 19, 2005, at or near Fort Polk, Louisiana. This was the sole charge of escape from custody that appellant was facing at trial, and thus the sole charge of escape from custody that he was prepared to defend against. After the government presented
Were there other instances when he had escaped custody?
No.
So this is the only possible time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
After the government presented no evidence, appellant was ever in the custody of Captain Kreitman during his case on the marriage, and instead alleged a different offense, that appellant was in the custody of Staff Sergeant Fleming, when he fled, the defense counsel made a timely and proper 917 motion, which was a demonstrated tactical decision based on how the charge was drafted and presented at trial.
Counsel, was it possible, based on the facts as you know them from the record, for the appellant to have been convicted of escaping from the custody of Captain Kreitman?
No, Your Honor.
And why is that?
Because there was never any evidence presented on the record that he was ever in the custody of Captain Kreitman. The response the trial counsel gave to the 917 motion about this delegation of authority goes more towards the second prong, in that Sergeant Fleming may or may not have had lawful authority when he apprehended the appellant, but it still doesn't satisfy that first element that Captain Kreitman had the accused and the appellant in his custody.
Thank you.
Could he have been retried?
On which charge, Your Honor?
For escaping from Captain Kreitman.
Could he have been tried on that?
Could he have been now tried for escaping from Captain Kreitman?
He cannot now be tried for that offense, Your Honor, because the military judge's use of the exceptions and substitutions implies that he's acquitted of that charge of escaping from Captain Kreitman. When the defense counsel made his 917 motion, he stated, "There's no evidence presented that Captain Kreitman put the accused in his custody at any time." This is in the joint appendix at page 26. The offense alleges that he was placed in custody by Captain Kreitman, as we discussed, Judge Ryan, and the escaping custody requires that he be in the actual custody of the person from whom he escapes. The military judge denied that 917 motion, but at findings he agreed with the defense counsel that the offense as pled was not proved, and the defense counsel's strategy at that point had been successful. It's at this point, though, the military judge cuts off appellant's due process rights at the knees as he wields the sword of exceptions and substitutions to find appellant guilty of escape from custody of Staff Sergeant Fleming, a change to the nature and identity of charge 3, and a charge the appellant was unable to defend against. By changing the certain person detailed in this charge 3, the military judge essentially found that Sergeant Fleming had taken the accused into custody as opposed to Captain Kreitman. He found that Staff Sergeant Fleming was authorized to take the accused into custody instead of Captain Kreitman. And he found that the appellant had released himself from Sergeant Fleming's custody before being properly released as opposed to Captain Kreitman.
Your substantial prejudice is based on opportunity to defend, not being misled and not double jeopardy. You're not conceding those, but your foundation is on opportunity to defend.
Absolutely. We're not conceding. We would agree that the opportunity to defend against that charge is the due process harm here, Your Honor, yes.
Flesh out how you would have availed yourself of that opportunity.
Sure. If he had noticed that he was actually facing this charge from Staff Sergeant Fleming, first of all, the cross-examination of Staff Sergeant Fleming would have surely looked different than the page and a half it occupies in the record now. Also,
For example,
he would have had it more laid out in particular terms what steps he took communicating with the police that he was actually in custody, what steps he took in regards to actually informing the appellant he was now under his custody. It's also likely the defense would have called this other NCO who Staff Sergeant Fleming mentions with him to testify about what he perceived the events and what he perceived as custody. Excuse me. It's also possible that Captain Kreitman would have been called to the stand by the defense to testify about this delegation of authority that he'd supposedly given Staff Sergeant Fleming. All those things did not happen in this case because the defense counsel and the appellant were never on notice that they were facing this escape from custody of Staff Sergeant Fleming.
Counsel, I'm trying to reconcile the argument you've made today with the argument you made in your reply brief. Reply brief, in dealing with the plain error issue, suggests that any action by the defense counsel upon the findings would have been futile because the judge had already ruled adversely. But the argument you're making today appeared to be that the judge agreed with the defense in making the ruling on findings with substitutions and exceptions. So it would seem there's a bit of contradiction, perhaps, and you might address that.
I'm not trying to be inconsistent, Your Honor, and I apologize for that. I think the futile nature we're talking about in the reply brief goes to the fact that when the 917 motion was raised and the judge made his ruling as to, at that point, all the elements had been met, if we're looking at this in the plain error realm, then the reason the defense counsel may not make that motion later on at findings, when findings are announced as to that element has now been changed, the same element that was raised at the 917 motion, because in his mind, that such a motion would now be futile.
At findings, he's not going to make the 917 motion. The motion he would make would be the objection that you're raising now, and that is, Your Honor, I object to the findings by substitutions and exceptions because I didn't have an opportunity to defend against this.
And the issue, the comparison we're attempting to draw, Your Honor, is we also look at this in terms of, while there are two different doctrines, futile versus the preserved error, the issue was squarely before the military judge. When the 917 motion was made, it was not made alleging that the government had failed to prove an escape had taken place or that there was a lack of lawful apprehension, but it was that they had failed to prove this element, i.e., that he was not in the custody of Captain Kreitman. When the exceptions and substitutions come out on findings, it's that same element that has been changed. And so at that point, the further objection by the defense counsel would have been futile because...
Why wouldn't it be perfectly appropriate for the defense counsel to say, Your Honor, in effect, you got me coming and going. I made the one objection at the close of the prosecution's case, and you rejected it. Now you appear to agree with it, and you've changed the findings. If I had known that, I would have defended differently against this case.
And absolutely, that would have been perhaps more appropriate for the defense counsel.
Why wasn't it required in order to preserve the objection?
Well, first of all, in terms of, we're looking at this idea of plain error. The only case of this material fatal variance line of cases that mentions this idea of plain error is U.S. v. Finch, which while we concede is this court's latest word on the material fatal variance doctrine, the other cases don't mention either plain error or any sort of objection. And there's two key distinctions between this point and Finch regarding this objection. Finch never talks about a 917 motion made on any point. And Finch also goes out of the way to note, and I believe footnote 5, the defense counsel didn't even raise this in his level 5 matters, which happened in this case. The defense counsel clearly wasn't waiving this issue. He operated in...
Isn't 1105 irrelevant? As far as whether there's plain error or not, that is, it may be cited as further confirming a situation, but once you get to 1105, it's too late.
Absolutely, we're not saying the 1105 on its own preserves the error, but what it does show is that the defense counsel, when he was making that 917 motion and when he opted not to make an objection at findings, wasn't really waiving anything. His idea was that it had been properly raised at the 917 motion, and then anything more would have been futile, which is why he didn't raise it to the convening authority to fix the error, who was advised, as we can tell from the record, that there was no error by the SJA.
If the defense, I may be beating a dead horse here. If the defense counsel thought it was futile at the time, why isn't it futile now?
It's not futile now, Your Honor, quite frankly, because this is not the panel with the military judge that made the wrong ruling in the first place.
I see.
Isn't this case Hoff? Hoff's escape from X, this is escape from X and Vice escape from Y. Hoff is assaulting X, Vice assaulting John Doe. What's the difference?
There's a key distinction between this case and Hoff. In Hoff, the change was made when the, as referred to trial, the charge included the victim's name. I believe it was Han Sun Yi.
Yeah.
At trial, he could not testify due to his injuries, and no other witness could identify him by name. So they accepted out that portion of the charge that included his name, but they kept in the portion that talked about an unknown Korean male. But there was never an argument from anyone that it was now a new person they were putting into the charge sheet or the charge, which is what happened in this case.
Well, no, that sounds analogous to this. Here he's escaping from X. The gravamen of the offense is the escape. Oh, he escapes from X, he escapes from Y. He assaults X, he assaults John Doe.
But what it does, again, Your Honor, I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself here, what it does, it's a new offense once you introduce a new person who has the accused in custody. Like we discussed with Judge Ryan, the government didn't prove that Captain Kreitman ever had the appellant in custody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not, I mean, we can debate to the cows come home about what has to be.
Okay, and in Hopp, the government didn't prove that he assaulted the named Korean.
Absolutely.
It proved he assaulted somebody.
Absolutely. And the court said there's no prejudice here because no one was misled or unprepared to go forward at trial. That's
not... Okay, and you've already explained why you think there's prejudice here, so I'm not going to go down that road. Okay. Thank you.
And the other key point, just one last thing on Hoff. In Hoff, the court talks about one of the other guiding forces behind that opinion was up until that point, this idea of variance had been strictly applied, i.e., when there's a variance between indictment and findings, that's going to be strictly a dismissal. And Hoff kind of sets the stage, no, you also have to test for prejudice. And that was one of the key focuses in Hoff. But also, I probably move on and say, when we agree with the government's brief at page 6, where they list out the elements of this offense, those elements include that a certain person apprehended the accused. In fact, as we discussed earlier, the certain person is likely needed to prove at least two prongs. The appellate argument, as we discussed, is that unlike in Hoff, adding a new person is a substantial material change. These changes also show another key distinction with Finch, where we talked about. In that case, the language it involved in the exceptions and substitution wasn't required to prove the conspiracy, unless it was easier to say it was immaterial. The things that were changed in Hoff, as this court noted in its opinion, was first of all the location, which I think we would all agree that a location is generally going to be a minor change and not going to rise to the level of material fatal variance. And the other portion that was changed is the manner in which the alcohol was consumed. It's this court's ruling at page 121 of the Finch opinion. That's less serious of a factual material nature is what occurred in this case, where a new person was added at findings before the appellant had a right to defend himself against that charge. The government chose a certain person in this specification and alerted the appellant via the charge sheet as to what incident and what certain person to defend against. The appellant was prepared to defend against the charge of escaping from the custody of Captain Calvin Kreitman, as was detailed in Charge 3's sole specification. The prejudice here, as we talked about with Judge Baker, is due process in nature, as appellant was unable to defend against this new charge, which differed from the one referred to trial. Appellant was successful in his defense on the charge that was referred to trial. However, the military judge's actions on findings convicted appellant of a different charge without allowing him to defend himself or even knowing such an outcome was possible. This material fatal variance substantially changed the nature of the offense. Hitting any further questions?
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court. I am Captain Stephanie Cooper, and along with Colonel Denise Lynn, we represent the United States in this matter. Appellant has failed to meet his burden of proving that a fatal variance occurred. The military judge's findings by exception and substitution did not create a material variance, since the nature and identity of the offense remained unchanged.
Appellant, do you disagree that based on the evidence in the record that the appellant could not have been convicted of escaping from the custody of the named person in the specification?
No, Your Honor, we don't. We believe that under a delegation of authority theory, then the appellant could have been convicted of escaping the custody of Captain Kreitman.
Was that evidence presented at trial?
Yes, Your Honor. That evidence was presented at trial through Sergeant Fleming when he testified that he was under the order of Captain Kreitman when he went down to the police station and took the appellant into custody. Further, appellant has not successfully shown that he was prejudiced here because he was not misled to the extent he was unable to adequately prepare for trial, nor is there any real risk of double jeopardy. Therefore, the government asks that this honorable court affirm the findings in the sentence in this case. The standard of review in this case is plain error because the appellant never objected to the variance at trial. Under United States v. Finch, a failure to object to the variance at trial constitutes the plain error test. Determining whether or not there's a fatal variance, the court looks to two things. First, they look to determine whether it's material, and second, whether it's prejudicial. In this case, the variance was not material because it did not substantially change the nature of the offense.
Is he supposed to lodge the same objection twice? Doesn't Richardson say that he doesn't have to?
It wasn't the same objection, Your Honor. The first objection was under an RCM 917 motion, which was for insufficiency of the evidence. That was not. An objection under MRE 103 has to be both timely and specific. It was not specific. It was not an objection to the variance, because at that point, the variance hadn't even been created. The variance wasn't created until the military judge returned his findings. Therefore, at that time, the appellant should have objected to the variance if he saw an issue with it. Because he didn't, we do review it under plain error.
Counsel, let's say that we disagree with you, or let's say that the defense counsel reasonably disagreed with you that delegation of authority was a viable government theory in this case. Okay, assuming that that's true, why couldn't the defendant have sat back and relied on the charge sheet that the government presented, knowing that it would have a good defense, and they could basically say, Judge, you need to dismiss this because as a matter of law, I can't be guilty. Why couldn't they do that? And then the military judge changing it to someone who was in the actual custody of, why wouldn't that be a fatal variance?
Your Honor, the name of the custodian is not an element to the charge of escape from custody. The element is whether or not an individual had authority to apprehend, not who that individual was.
Isn't an element of the offense that he was in the custody of X?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. He was in the custody of X? No, he was in the custody of Y. The element of the offense is that he was in the custody of X, that X was authorized, and that he escaped from the custody. Is that not an element of the offense?
Your Honor, the element is that said person was authorized to apprehend the accused, and that a certain person apprehended the accused, and that the said person was authorized to apprehend the accused. Therefore, the element in both of those cases is dealing with the authority to apprehend, not the individual who apprehended.
The third element.
Your Honor, the third element is that the accused freed himself or herself from custody after being released by proper authority. Looking at Huff, Your Honor, in the Huff case, then the element of assault with intent to, or with intent, was that A, attempted to, offered to, or did bodily harm to a certain person. Just like in that case, the court could accept out the name of one person and replace it with the name of another person, so can in this case the military judge take out the name of one person in an escape from custody and add a new person. Also under United States v. Lee, Your Honor, when we're looking at the whether or not this substantially changes the offense, in United States v. Lee, there was a variance as to the form of marijuana. The appellant was charged with marijuana, with possession of marijuana in the hashish form, and the variance found him guilty of possession of marijuana in the plant-growing form. The court there said, because the form of the substance is not essential to constitute the offense and may be entirely omitted without affecting the change against the accused, it's mere surplusage and can be disregarded.
Okay, that's two kinds of marijuana. Here you got two different people. Escape from custody, that a certain person apprehended the accused, that the said person was authorized to do so, and that the accused freed himself before being released by proper authority. You got a certain person. You know, X apprehended the accused, and he was authorized to do so. Nope. Y apprehended the accused, and he was authorized to do so.
Your Honor,
how is that not a fatal variance? It's an element of the offense.
Your Honor, just as the marijuana is the element of the offense, and the different forms are unnecessary to constitute the offense.
I don't follow the analogy. He knew, the accused in Lee knew that he was accused of possessing marijuana. Here, he's accused of escaping from the custody of X, and no, it's Y. If it were marijuana and cocaine, I think you'd have a better analogy.
Your Honor, he was accused of escaping the custody of an individual with the authority to do so. The authority to apprehend is the element of this offense.
A particular named individual.
Can you address the appellant's argument that he was deprived of the opportunity to explore defense based on the staff sergeant's authority, as well as the staff sergeant's indication, if any, that to the appellant that he was in custody?
Yes, Your Honor. The appellant had the opportunity for a fair trial. He had the opportunity to cross-examine Sergeant Fleming. He had the opportunity to call any additional witnesses he felt were relevant, and he had the opportunity to raise any potential defenses.
I understand that, but did he know that he was that Fleming was the person referred to in the elements, whatever the elements say?
Your Honor, under the delegated authority theory to the government's case, then the appellant was on constructive notice. When Sergeant Fleming went down to the police station and picked appellant up from the police station, and then after that proceeded to bring the appellant back to the company offices. And finally, when the appellant received the charge sheet, which listed Captain Kreitzman's name as the individual whose custody he was under, that is when the appellant was on constructive notice that the government was proceeding with a delegation of authority theory.
Do staff sergeants have the authority to apprehend?
Yes, Your Honor, they do.
So it's not dependent on delegated authority?
It's not dependent on delegated authority, yes, Your Honor. However, in this case, Sergeant Fleming was not acting in his inherent authority. He was acting under that delegated authority, as he made clear during his direct examination when he said he apprehended or he took appellant into custody based on the order of Captain Kreitzman.
Counsel, and maybe I'm straying too far afield, but let's say that the specification said that on such and such a date, Lance Corporal Benatz murdered John Doe, okay? And the Lance Corporal and his counsel talk, and they say, well, this is great. We're going to go plead not guilty because we know that John Doe is alive and well, and the person I really murdered was Jane Doe, okay? Trial comes, and as it turns out, you know, they cannot prove that John Doe was murdered because John Doe is alive. The military judge, after denying the 917 motion, comes back with a finding of guilty to the murder of Jane Doe. Would that be okay?
Well, Your Honor, that case is very similar, or that hypothetical is very similar to United States v. Huff, where the appellant was charged with assault on a specific individual, and the court or the military judge came back and through a variance found him guilty of assault on an unknown individual.
Okay, and you don't think that it changes, that it has any impact on the defendant's strategy or right to notice or a trial if they are told that they're going to be needing to defend against a charge involving one person to which they may or may not have a defense, because I think in that way it's very different than the Hoff case, okay, as opposed to another person to which they may not have a defense. You don't think that it could impact their decision as to how they might plead or the form that they might choose or the witnesses they might call?
It may, Your Honor. However, in this case, the appellant was on constructive notice. And more so, the appellant in Hoff, the court determined that as long as there's enough information in the specification to apprise the accused of the offense of which he's being charged, and in Hoff, they stated that the date, the location, and the actual offense, it was enough information. Likewise here, the appellant was only accused of one possible escape from custody. There was only one escape from custody here, and it took place on December 19th, and it took place at Fort Polk. So the appellant was provided as much notice as the defendant in Huff was.
So as long as the defendant himself is aware of the crime that he committed, then that's sufficient notice, whether it's in the specification or not.
Your Honor, Dunn versus United States requires that the accused has a right to be heard on the specific charge of which he is accused. Here, the appellant was informed of the specific charge in which he was accused. There was only one escape from custody, and that was the one that not only he was charged with, but it is the same exact one he was ultimately convicted of. There are not two offenses here, like in Ray or in Taffo, two cases that the appellant argues. In both of those cases, the changes, the variance that was created a different incident. Here, changing the name of the custodian does not create a different incident. The incident is still the exact same and the only escape from custody.
Well, here's a difference. There's this weird business here. This is an odd kind of custody where you say you're under custody, but go have a smoke if you want. Come back whenever you feel like it, right? I don't know what kind of custody that is, but obviously, Captain Kreitzman had nothing to do with that. So there's no point in him asking questions about what kind of custody he has of Captain Kreitzman because he's not in the picture. If the staff sergeant is apparently the guy who's saying, go have a smoke and I hope you come back, wouldn't you want to ask about this weird smoke and stuff?
Your Honor,
I mean, I'm wondering if he was under custody or not, because if I have somebody in custody, I'm not telling them to go have a smoke and come back when you feel like it.
Your Honor, under Sergeant Fleming's testimony, and in Joint Appendix, page 23, Sergeant Fleming made it clear any time appellant went anywhere, he had to be escorted. So that leads you to believe that even when he was given smoke breaks, he was escorted. At all times, he was escorted.
Was he escorted when he went on the smoke break in question here?
Well, Sergeant Fleming, Your Honor, said any time he went anywhere, he was escorted, so yes.
Well, how did he escape then if he was escorted?
It's pretty rigorous custody.
Now.
Looking towards the second prong of the prejudice test, then there is no real risk of double jeopardy here. Under United States v. Deere, the court can look to the entire record of trial in determining whether or not there's a risk of double jeopardy. Looking at the record...
Well, aren't the parties in agreement on that point?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
You agree that he could not be retried on the original charge?
Absolutely, Your
Honor.
He could not be retried on the original
charge. Because I understood you to say the opposite earlier.
No, okay, he could not be tried on the original charge, Your Honor.
When the 917 motion was litigated, and I said, there's no proof he was in the custody of the captain. And the judge said, I agree. Bingo. And then later they said, but he was in the custody of Fleming. And the government went on this agency theory. If he was not in the custody of the captain, then how can he be the agent? How can Fleming be the agent of someone who never exercised the authority in the first place?
Your Honor, it's not the government's position that he was never in the custody of Captain Kreitman.
He in the custody of Kreitman?
Excuse me, sir. Excuse me, Your Honor?
When was he in the custody of Kreitman?
He was in the custody of Captain Kreitman when he was picked up by Sergeant Fleming. So as soon as Sergeant Fleming...
So the judge erred when he found it by exceptions and substitutions?
It was unnecessary, Your Honor, because... With Captain Kreitzman's name still in the specification under a delegated authority theory, with Sergeant Fleming's testimony that he acted under the order of Captain Kreitzman, then that was enough to withstand scrutiny. He was in, at the point that Sergeant Fleming picked him up, he was in custody, well, maybe physical custody of Sergeant Fleming, he was in custody of Captain Kreitzman.
Was he in the custody of the Secretary of the Army?
At that point, Your Honor, you're going
Was he in the custody of the divisional CO?
Your Honor, there was only one order that was given from Captain Kreitman directly to Sergeant Fleming, and Sergeant Fleming was the one who executed that order. It wasn't such an attenuated circumstances as there could be in other cases. Our case is very specific that it was one individual who made one order, and that Sergeant Fleming was the one who executed the order.
In the 917 motion, did the government argue that there was a delegated authority?
Yes, Your Honor. The government argued that through Sergeant Fleming's testimony, he stated that Captain Kreitman had ordered him to go down and pick up the appellant. Under United States v. Finch, this court found that where there is an exception or substitution, even when it goes to the element of the offense, then as long as it doesn't go to the core of the offense, then it is not fatal. In this case, the escape from custody, the core of the offense is the throwing off of physical restraint, the actual escape from lawful custody. The core of the offense does not rest on who the individual who took appellant into custody is. Therefore, just as this court ruled in United States v. Finch, as the core defense is necessary, but all of the elements can be, or some of the elements can be accepted or substituted. Likewise here, the change in the name of the custodian did not substantially change the nature of the offense, nor did it prejudice the accused to such an extent he was unable to prepare for trial and prepare a defense. If there are no further questions, may I conclude?
Please.
Under the plain error test, appellant has failed to meet his burden in establishing the variance by the military judge was both material and prejudicial. Therefore, the appellant deserves no relief in this case. The government requests that this honorable court affirm the findings in the sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes, briefly.
Just briefly, turning to page 23 of the joint appendix that government counsel cited, there was a question posed by the assistant trial counsel, quoting at the top. You retrieved him. He's now in your custody. What did you do? And that question was asked by the assistant trial counsel to Staff Sergeant Fleming. Captain Kreitman was never called to the stand. The assistant trial counsel basically for the purpose of the question, presupposed and agreed with the witness, he's in your custody. So this idea of delegation of authority, we can talk about it here on appeal, but also we have to remember it wasn't accepted by the military judge. He used exceptions in substitutions because the government hadn't met its burden of showing that Captain Quaitman ever had custody. This delegation of authority that we talk about, as I discussed in the first part of my argument, goes to the second element. The second element is whether or not the person who took him to custody was that custody and apprehension lawful. And in this case, while there's testimony presented that Staff Sergeant Fleming is operating under Captain Quaitman's authority to go out and apprehend him, that meets the second element. The first element is that a certain person apprehended you here. Here, the government presented no evidence that Captain Quaitman ever apprehended.
So an officer can only apprehend somebody by physically doing it himself?
Custody goes...
Is that your position?
That an officer can only apprehend.
Right, so if General Eisenhower wants to apprehend me, he can't send the MPs to do it. He has to go physically apprehend me.
No, I don't think that is
the cuffs on himself.
I apologize, Judge Baker. No, I don't think that is the issue. But if that's the case, then you respectfully escape from the custody of the MPs, you wouldn't be charged with escaping custody from General Eisenhower. You would have escaped custody of the MPs, Your Honor. And a final point here to distinguish this case based on Hoff. The name of the certain person was not altered or changed. The military judge introduced a new person on findings. An entirely new offense was introduced at findings. The other key point to remember when we're discussing Hoff was decided before the Supreme Court's three seminal cases in this area, Dunn, Schmuck, and Sterone, that set out the appellant's right to know the offense he's being convicted of. Pending any further questions?
Thank you, counsel. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation. This case is now submitted, and the court will stand in recess until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.